Welcome to Toffee Blue View, your source for all things Everton. I'm Jerry. Max and Terry are here. And for those of you watching with your eyes, I'm out of note cards. I'm out of them. No more. So when I throw these, it's just sad. So, not the worst weekend. Not the worst weekend, all right? Halfway decent results in London, and then, you know, they who must not be named came in second place. They got the scored a lot of points trophy. So, you know, well done. So that draw at Goodison ended up being kind of okay for us and not so okay for them. I'm super fine with that. And Michael Keane sliding in. Yes. Okay.
Jordan Pickford
as well?
For me, that was a, you know, I think that was more of a goal-scoring opportunity.
Oh, man. You know, that's like saying, which type of chocolate do you like better? They are both delicious. They are tasty.
It's just sweet, isn't it, given the fact that December 1st, when he cocked up at Anfield, they celebrated as if they'd already won the league. And, yeah. You know, turns out 1v1v Salah, Pickford comes out on top, and oops, you don't get the 3 points.
That's right. And you know what? Nobody was measuring his arms at that point. Uh-huh. Crazy, you know? I remember 2012, the New England Patriots are probably the team I like the least in American football. Just don't like them. And they kept on winning games, and people were like, oh, gosh, I hope they don't win all their games because then we'll never hear the end of it. And I said, no, I hope they win all their games and lose in the Super Bowl because then it will be a farther fall down, and it will hurt more. And that is exactly what has just happened, and I'm so fine with that. All right? Same situation. All right? All right? And, you know, City always will have a little place. You know what helped watching the City celebrations? Having watched All or Nothing. You know, with my kids, who are sitting there pointing out Vincent Kompany's kids, and that's just friggin' cool. Mm. All right? But anyway, so Terry, if you know Terry, you know that Terry is like the emperor of GIF. So he's got a GIF for everything. And I think he rolled out all of them Sunday. Terry, also breathing sigh of relief, sir?
Yeah, major sigh of relief. But there was an 80-second period where City were losing and Liverpool were winning. And it was like seeing a doorway into hell, like a trapdoor. And then for 80 seconds, I was being held over it. And then after 80 seconds, someone had pulled me away and shut the door. And I'm just glad to not be there today.
People were like rubbing Terry's shoulders and Terry was like mumbling, I can still see it when I shut my eyes.
Pretty much. I was watching, I watched the Liverpool game live, unfortunately. Couldn't get a stream for the Everton game. And I was at my parents' house and they were watching the Liverpool game. So I thought I was in for a rough time when it looked like there was about to be a party atmosphere at Anfield, led by one Jamie Carragher on commentary. It was a much more pleasant viewing to see Man City lift the cup than it was to see Liverpool.
Yeah, they American feed, NBC Sports, what they had done for the final day of games is they put every game on different networks, right? Which is why Everton Spurs was on Sci-Fi Channel. So normally you check in there, you can see Twilight Zone, or you can see Croczilla versus Octagon. I don't know, just something insane. And then instead you flip it over there and there's Everton Spurs in like the last place you will look. All right. They had pregame on NBC Sports and on NBC Max. That's why when you flipped it over there, it was Twilight Zone and you were worried it was like some severe foreshadowing.
What made it worse is the fact that they had two commentary feeds running at the same time when they actually got the game on. So I couldn't even listen to it. It was giving me too much of a headache, but
it was bizarre hearing two different people commenting on talking about the Everton game at the same time. It was really awful. And I'm like, this is a professional broadcast. You know what I mean? This is like, yeah, it's awful. I got angry, but you know, whatever. In the first half, you couldn't have done much more to make it worse, though.
True, very true.
Anyway, we'll talk more about that later. We have a match reaction coming for those of you who are listening. And in addition to our match reaction, we've also got an end of season awards. Toffee Blues people voted, and not just us, but the people who follow the account. They all voted on different end of season awards, and these are not like goofy awards. These are the kind of things that, you know, I feel like the club would normally award as well. So it's not like, you know, best beard, although we know who would win that. Alright, that's not even a contest. Just give him the trophy already, Andre. Sign the papers. And later on, Max is probably going to have to leave us, so instead of doing a quiz today, Terry and I are going to talk about our greatest TV shows. We're going to pretend like we've met someone who just doesn't believe in TV, doesn't watch it, whatever, and we're going to be making off-the-cuff arguments for our ones that we feel like are the greatest. All right? So, obviously, we'll be talking about Becker and Dharma and Greg. And if you know anything, if you heard me talk or Terry talk ever, you could probably guess some of these. But anyway, so stay tuned for that. Let's get the match reaction on the road. So let's just say first half was shit. Can we just get that out of the way now? Done with it. All right. Yeah. We do need to mention goals on set pieces. First one, because Yerry Mina went up for a header and then fell on top of the ball, allowing Dyer to have a shot on goal that even Eric Dyer couldn't miss. All right. If it's one that I could make, I'm pretty certain Dyer's got it covered. So the rest of the whole first half was pretty flat. Max, what was your turning point of the match? Because it did change. You know what I mean? Like the tide did turn.
I suppose it's got to be the changes, hasn't it? Really, you know, compliment to Marco Silva. Obviously, the most influential of them being Adam Ola Luchman. I think within minutes of him coming on, he picked his head up, drove the ball forward, fed the ball to Sigurdsson. Sigurdsson picked out Walcott, and Walcott's, you know, put us level, but. I don't know, it was I just thought for the first half, what we made three changes, if I'm not correct, and then Tottenham made five from their fantastic game in Amsterdam. So yeah, as you said earlier, Jerry, it did seem like a very last game of the season type, you know, flip flops and party atmosphere. But I've got to be honest, I've missed going the away this season after seeing some of the videos that were coming out from the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium from our end. As soon as the Mikel Arteta song get whipped out, I was just absolutely devastated it didn't go. I was also thinking as well, hey, how far up the haircut league would we be if we had Andre Gomez and Mikel Arteta working together in the same central midfield partnership? Oh. That would just be absolutely sensational.
We'd be on 98 points in the haircut.
I know, I think we'd actually win it though. For the rest of the game, we got back in the second half because we made a few awkward changes. I wasn't particularly a fan of Kurt Zouma at right back. I just thought it made the old defence look a bit awkward. But obviously, kind of looked to find half even competed a bit more with Tottenham, who were lackadaisical at times, and you know, rightly so. They've reached the first ever Champions League final. But got back into it, made those changes. So for me, that was the changing point.
Yeah, I was sitting there just, number one, biting a hole through my lip because I was keeping an eye on my phone and the scores. So, you know, that was not good. And additionally, watching us just put out this really uninspired performance. Really sloppy. A lot of misplayed passes. But Max, you mentioned something that I wanted to, be fair to the guys. We did have those changes, and when you bring in changes like that, it's going to bring some weirdness, you know what I mean? Some lack of chemistry. Players that don't normally, like Zouma at right back, I thought the right side just looked totally disjointed. You have Walcott in there who has not been starting lately.
Not a usual starter,
So that whole right side, Zouma really, you know, although he's not a slow guy, he has some speed. I don't deem him necessarily a quick guy. And typically you want quick little players being able to zip up the sideline and make those crosses back in his service, Miss May.
Yeah, you know? The injuries to Coleman, Walcott, Calvert-Lewin, you know, they were obviously sprung up on us,
yeah,
you know, quite soon. And to be fair, it's been a long season, so to sort of be expected towards the end of the season. So, but yeah, and I think, as I mentioned earlier, if you look at the reverse fixture, Goodison, that's 6-2. With the exception of the derby at Anfield, that 6-2 was the lowest point of the season for me. And then when you get people putting out the shouts like, you know, play Ellis Sims or play some of the kids that have won the under-23s league, I can understand from Marco Silva's perspective, you know, you don't want another tonking on your record against Spurs, you know, not be playing on his mind. So I think, you know, he tried to deputise and not lose as much quality, and, you know, Tosin and Walcott getting on the score sheet, it paid dividends.
Yeah.
Well, barely. When I say Tosin getting on the score sheet, I mean barely. That was probably the worst goal I've seen us score all season, that, to be fair, but they all count.
It does. I was happy he got a goal, though. You know what I mean? After this season, going the way it has for him, you know, good for him. So, Terry, let's move to you. We were talking about the turning point of the match. If you agree with that, what Max said, then let's just move on to another talking point. Do you have any particular talking points, you know, talking about any players that you felt like excelled a little bit more than usual, or somebody you thought was a man of the match, or somebody you thought just flat out was turd? Wherever you want to go with those, basically.
No, not really. I mean, I just was thinking about a point on Zoom at right back. I did think when I saw that, like, oh, it's not going to be good reading if you're John Joe Kenny, you know, like the first choice right back's out, and you know they're shifting a centre back across to compensate rather than play you. But the when I think about it, I think if Richarlison's fit for that game, I think Kenny starts. I think that the idea of playing Kenny with Walcott in front of him leaves Kenny too exposed. Because it's happened earlier in the season when Kenny's played right back, he's always had Walcott in front of him. Walcott isn't the greatest at covering defensively, is he? You know, let's be honest. So I think it may have just been more of a precaution. Like, well, we're going to put Zouma at right back since we're going to have to play Walcott at right wing, because Walcott won't screen his full back, but Zouma is obviously going to be a much more competent and robust defender. Mm-hmm. Especially in one-on-one scenarios than John Joe Kenny is, because John Joe Kenny has struggled in a lot of one-on-ones this season. I thought that maybe Spurs could have played on him if he'd have started. So I was where it's probably not as bad as all that is lack of selection. But other than that, no, it was a very flat sort of nothing game. It was, you know, dead rubber. We're all going to finish where we're going to finish. They've got a massive game coming up, even though it's 3 weeks away. They don't want to be, you know, extending themselves. And we're missing a lot of players as well, so we can't put our best foot forward. And we're missing key players as well, our whole right-hand side. So I think everyone was happy to take a point apiece. You know, no injuries come off and our season's finished and they've got one more game. So it's another decent result at a top six team as well. I'm glad to be making them more regular, because we need to start building on that and making that regular, consistent thing. We need, you know, the next step is to win these games away from home. But you know, it will hopefully come with time. But it's a good start, because there's the time where you look at this run of top six fixtures we've had and you were thinking, where are we going to get the points there? But yeah, turns a bit of a corner this season, hopefully, when it comes to that.
Yeah, really, I was really pleased that we didn't just fade away and continue in the same form that we had in the first half. I was worried that was what was going to be the whole game. I got to be honest. I thought that we were already on the beach in our brains. You know, already had the flip-flops on. You know, I was very worried about that. And when we came out second half, and the changes came out just after the half, Silva brought in Lookman and Gomez. Yeah, it was as though it had been an injection, just a straight-up injection of energy. And it looked like people kind of knew where everybody was going to be then. You know, it almost felt like that chemistry came back. There was a lot. Our passes were more on point. We weren't giving up possession as easily. It was nice. So are we disappointed in their goals? I was disappointed in the first goal because it reminded me of early in the season. You know what I mean? A lot of those off, you know, corner. And their second goal was a great shot for the corner. Did we have – who was on the edge between the ball and the goal? Did it look like somebody went down and, like, bent down? Who was that?
For Ericsson's free kick?
Yeah.
I'm not 100%
sure. I think it's a Spurs player in the wall. We've got, like,
there was the four-man wall and the Spurs player just on the ends. I Pickford just let a yard or so go on his post, and he obviously was beaten by his side. But I've got to say, I think out of all the goals I've seen scored against Everton this season, Christian Eriksen scored two of the best.
Oh, yeah.
Like that goal at Goodison too, and that free kick. Well, you know,
see, at first I thought that was one of our players that went like that, and I was just, I was livid. I was like, why are you there then, man? You know, but if it was one of theirs, then my ire subsides.
Yeah, there's four Everton players, a Spurs player, then another two Everton players, and it's right in that gap. That's why he's not.
Yeah, exactly.
He's sort of like leaning into the playing on his side as well to stop him from jumping into the space that he's leaving. So he sort of not only ducks, he runs towards the player on his left, the, you know, Eriksen's right, to open the space. So it's a good move, like it's a good free kick routine. But first goal, I think, I mean, you know, Mina's terrible on it. You know, it's really poor, but, you know, he's ring rusty, isn't he? He hasn't played a lot, and when he has played, he hasn't been consistent. What that is, he completely mistimes his jump.
He does.
He knows where the ball is. He knows what he's meant to do, but he's jumped too early, so he's completely missed it and come down on top of it, and made himself look a bit foolish. But I think that's really harsh on him. If one of the two defenders who've been playing consistently all season did that, you'd be like, what the hell? But a player who's, you know, not played for weeks, you know, more likely to make mistakes like that.
It's his first game back, you know. That's why, like, the first half I was thinking, like, out of all the sloppy play and everything, I was trying to be fair. I was trying my best to be fair. And I do feel like, you know, we grew into the game as it went. I did feel like we got better. And I felt like second half, we looked strong. We looked like a strong side.
Yeah. You know, we have to weather the Tottenham storm, didn't we, really? You know, first home game back after making it to a Champions League final. There was another bit of a party atmosphere. Well, it seemed like from the other end of my stream, going on at their ground. Yeah. But we were kind of adding to that. So I don't think it was too much of a disadvantage to us.
Yeah. If anybody saw those videos that got posted from Toffee Blue's account, I believe those are all Edwards when he was there. He took those videos and posted. And I think it's actually being passed around to a lot of different social media accounts. Yeah, pretty good stuff. Edward, way to go getting those recorded, man. So just a few things. Tosin, how do we feel like Tosin played? It's his first game back. Got a goal. It should be quotation marks, you know what I mean? Because it's ish.
Yeah. It's all right.
And Calvert-Lewin, but he just hasn't got the physical tools, as he's just not fast enough doesn't like, you know, pressure the opposition as much. But when, you know, if there's a chance loose in the box, I trust Tosin more than I trust any of the other strikers. He's got the brain that he wants, just not the body.
Yeah.
Didn't win as much in the air. Held up, you know, when the ball came to his feet, he held up okay. His combination play was so-so. It took him a while to get into the game. It did. His touch at first was awful. I saw one just bounce like 5 yards off him, and I thought we had Lukaku again. It was weird. But you know, I did think he grew into it a bit, but his press compared to Calvert-Lewin's press is night and day, because Calvert-Lewin just gets on the opposition in a hurry. It's just so much faster.
It's down to his physical tools, isn't it, really? I mean, you can't doubt the effort and the audacity of Tosin.
Yeah.
Like he does work hard. I just don't think he's got those physical elements.
It's just
in his locker. I like his combination play, linking off. You know, I don't doubt that. I think that's half decent. But as I've said earlier, like, if, you know, we're going to have to try and get a few players out the door, and that if someone can come in for 20 million, you know, you're not surprised that they're listening to offers. Because I think it's only like, what, it was only a third league goal this season. And when I've looked back on all his goals in general, they've all, I mean, to be fair, you know, hats off to him for finally getting a goal against the top six side, because I don't think that's his first goal that's come against the top six side. And like, but for this season, it's been against Fulham and Crystal Palace, if I'm not wrong. So, yeah, if he's going to stay, and he just needs to start scoring more against bigger opposition, I think.
And he does have, mentioning Lukaku, he does have more against the top 10 than Lukaku this season.
Yeah.
But then again, a lot of our center backs do. So, yeah. I wanted to make sure we talked about Tosun. Walcott got a goal. He was he lost his footing as he was scoring. So it's one of those, like, both of our goals, like, it was perfectly placed, Walcott's, but both of ours had kind of an oops quality to it. But this one actually involved some decent combination play. So that was okay. But how do we feel like Walcott did? And are we still thinking, I mean, it's a pretty strong chance he stays with us next season. You guys going to be okay with that based on what he did during this one?
I mean, I've never thought he's going just because Silver clearly likes him. I think the only ones who've got a problem with him are supporters, and frankly, they're not the important ones when it comes to those decisions. it's not like you can't, if it was up to Everton supporters, the amount of players we'd get rid of after one bad performance. Like, Yerry Mina's every week, he's either, you know, class or he's shite. It depends, you know, how he's playing.
If you haven't figured it out, everybody, Schneiderlin fanboy, Yerry Mina fanboy, all right? Still working on who I am, and I'm probably like Tom Davies or Benny Boningame. All right. at least they're, you know, man crushes play. So, but yeah, man. Yeah, you're right, though. It's a lot of flip flopping on Mina.
Yeah, but Walcott, I mean, I never thought he was going to go. I think in a perfect world, he would, and he'd be replaced with someone who has a lot more impact when he plays than he does, but no, I don't think he's going anywhere, and I'm okay with it, I suppose. I mean, he's on a lot of money for someone who doesn't contribute a lot, but there's a long list of players you need to get rid of, and he's well down that list, you know what I mean? Like, you can't be talking about getting rid of Walcott when you've still got Nias and Bolasie and players like that. There's much more dead wood to shift before you start considering Walcott, who, you know, even though he has been poor on the whole this season, he has done something. He does come into the team and, you know, give something, even if it's not value for how much he's getting paid, or as much as other players, or as much as we think other players like Luckman could give. He gives something at least, whereas there's a lot of players who don't even kick a ball for Everton who need to go before he does. So I think he's probably going to last another season, and then maybe next summer he'll be on the list to go.
It just doesn't seem like a priority to get rid of him compared to what else we have on the payroll right now. You know, and he can come in and still provide a goal every once in a while. He did seem pretty damn wasteful there in the first half, though. I will say, giving the ball away, he had numerous opportunities, and it would be because maybe he wasn't ready for the ball when it came across to him. You know, he couldn't get the footing. Little things like that would happen. So, do I feel like he's the perfect starter for us right now? No, but can he still do a job a little bit? Yeah. He can, but once he starts getting older, that speed, if it's not there, you know, Walcott is not going to be not going to be the most useful player. So maybe he's got one more season with us. Maybe.
Plays well against Tottenham.
So fine with that.
For his involvement there. Yeah, he's been involved in something like eight goals in the last nine games against Tottenham. So he's got a good return rate against
that interview that he did talking about how happy he was that City won the league. I was like, okay, Theo, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, enjoy next season. We'll see you in the summer.
Very genuine too, like, you know what I mean. It wasn't like just saying shit to like make supporters happy. It seemed like he meant it, and I'm fine with that. You know, if he's genuine, I'll find a place in the heart. Be okay. There's a lot of players we could be talking about, but the segment will go on too long. I just want to spare a thought for Andre Gomez. Is that his last match for us? If so, damn. All right, because, you know, we've all loved Andre. All right, but let's hope we can tie him down. I actually think we are going to get him. I do think we're going to get him. I have way less faith in Zuma, which is a shame because he's been really consistent this season. But that's probably for another. I just want to say, you know, it was good, Andre. Come back. Just saying. All right. Anything else that we feel like we need to go into as far as this match? Yeah, it was cool. You know, had a positive feeling, happy feeling at the end of this one. And then a bunch of other stuff contributed to a celebration the rest of the day. So, yeah, good things. All right, well, that's it for our Spurs match reaction. That's our last match reaction until we'll probably do one for preseason. That's a thing that will come at some point, preseason. But for now, season's over. We are going to do an end-of-season awards segment. That'll be coming up after this. It's time for end-of-season awards. It's one of those things that we do after the last game of the season. It's a concept we made up. Yes. So, guys, Toffee Blues put it out there to social media. We've got four categories. And, yeah, over 1,500 people voted, or there were over 1,500 votes. So unless it was one dude with 1,500 accounts, which I don't put past anybody, all right, a lot of people are involved in these decisions. So what I'm going to do is I am going to name a category, and if you guys could name who you feel like deserves it, and then let's consider anybody else who could have possibly gotten it, and then we divulge who the winner was of that moment. I feel like we should maybe go in reverse order of importance, I think. So end with the player of the season, because usually that's the big thing. So let's start with most improved player. Terry, most improved player of the season, I guess, is the best way to say it. Who do you feel like deserves it, and anybody else we should consider?
Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I think you could also make a strong case for Michael Keane. I think he was the only other standout option for the category, but Dominic Calvert-Lewin has come on such a long way since last season, and the season before he improves every year. Now, that's not to say he's the finished article. There's still some things he needs to do, but last season we were absolutely, you know, desperate for a striker. We couldn't, you know, we didn't have one in the squad for half the season until we bought Tosin. And then when we brought Tosin after like a short settling in period of a couple of weeks, he was the first choice striker straight away. Calvert-Lewin was there last season the whole time, and to go from, you know, oh, he's just a kid, he works hard, no one will, you know, but he's not really, you know, doesn't count as an option for striker, to being the far and away first choice striker. He's gone from rotation player and to first choice, immediate first choice. So Tosin is still at the club and now can't buy minutes unless he's injured, unless, say, Calvert-Lewin is injured. So that shows how far he's come in such a short amount of time. And even after the Man United game, they were actually throwing up stats, Sky Sports, sorry, where comparing Lukaku to Calvert-Lewin. And Calvert-Lewin was beating him in a lot of metrics. And it's like, that's how far he's come in such a short space of time, that the striker that we still haven't replaced and, you know, still, you know, struggle badly to replace, the kid who was there the whole time has come on so much that he could now be compared to him in every metric, except obviously goals, which is an important metric. But as I say, that hopefully will come. But for me, he's come so far this season. He's now the far and away first choice central striker, and I think even if we do bring someone in the summer, I think it's likely that we will. I think he's going to have to wait to get that shirt off him. I think Calvert-Lewin starts the new season as first choice, and it's his shirt to lose.
Mm-hmm. I would agree that I do think he starts going into the season. Max, for you, most improved player.
To be fair, I 100% agree with Calvert-Lewin. Calvert-Lewin was my first shout, and to me, like everything that Terry's just said, you know, he was brought in from a minimal fee from Sheffield United to play under 23s football. Like, you know, he wasn't brought in for a price tag of £50 million. There's no weight of expectation on his shoulder. He was just kind of throwing in at the deep end. last season because we just failed to replace Lukaku, and he was leading the line, and, you know, very isolated at times. And obviously, you know, not done his goal return any favours, but in terms of his development this season, for me, if it was to pinpoint the moments, it was the Merseyside derby at Goodison. He came up against Van Dijk. Van Dijk, you know, had him in his pocket, but Calvert-Lewin didn't give up, and I think he learnt a lot from that performance. And, you know, in his games against Chelsea and the games against Arsenal, he just had the beating of the defence every time. And in you know, covering ground and stretching the pitch, he was just absolutely fantastic. So, as you've already been said, I'll put it to one side. Michael Keane, again, another name that you could throw in there, given his, you know, just how disjointed the defence was. And, you know, go back to the first game of the season, Phil Jagielka gets sent off in the first half. For me, he steps up and almost becomes a leader there. One of the only players I've known to get a serious head injury in a season and become better when he comes back. Who else? Oh, I've got to give him a shout out, Morgan. You know, to come back the way he has this season, you know, a lot of people doubting him. At times, even last season, although in his first season at the club, him and Idrissa Gueye in central midfield looked like an absolute dream pair. The season after that, it wasn't as pretty, and he went down a lot of fans' estimations. But come back now. I think, you know, he's obviously had his situations off the pitch. But he's come back now, and, you know, he's been working hard. He's covered in terms of, you know, the way you describe it, Jerry, as being like that bit of bread that muffs the whole, the last bit of the soup, and just, it's what he does, isn't it? He just appears out of nowhere and robs the ball, and it's just absolutely sensational to watch when he's on form. So he'd be another one that deserves a mention.
Totally forgot about Schneiderlin. Yeah, he has this little patch that he's had coming back. He's been strong, and I didn't see it coming. I didn't see it coming at all, because I thought he was done and not going to be playing much more for us at all. He's done well, and respect to him for making a comeback like that. DCL, I think, is fully worthy. Especially, I think you guys make very compelling arguments. For me, DCL or Michael Keane are the two you really have a strong argument for. Schneiderlin, he didn't get to play as much down the stretch, and so that's why I would probably give it to one of the others. But my answer would be Michael Keane, just because I gave him so much shit last year. Oh, my God. You know, we talked about him being, like, not emotionally strong, just a little fragile, and he couldn't adapt very well to different systems. And I will agree, last year it didn't seem like he was. And I think he benefited this season from some very specific coaching and some very specific partnerships. And I think Silva is detail-oriented, and I think he thrives in moments like that. In consistency. He needs consistency when it comes to training and games and all of that. So yeah, Michael Keane is sort of my guilty pick. I feel I have a lot of guilt over that, because I started off being like Michael Keane super fan in the very beginning, and then I got so disappointed. So I'm bringing it back, Michael Keane. Just so you know, my bad. Big old apology from me. You've been doing well. And actually, that is the Toffee Blues Most Improved Player of the Year, Michael Keane. Okay. Although I think these gentlemen have made a very good case for DCL here. Very good case. So, goal of the season. Let's start with Max this time. Max, what's your goal of the season?
I've got a feeling it's going to be everyone else's. Because I prepared for this, I did list a few others. But Sigurdsson's against Leicester. To bust the Cruyff turnout in the middle of the pitch and fire the ball into the top corner from about 30 yards. That's something that's going to get replayed in highlight reels from years to come. It's just one of those moments where you just think, oh my God. And, you know, it's a trademark of his. It's what he's known for. And hopefully he can score a few more similar to that for, you know, next season. In terms of other nominations, I really like Dominic Calvert-Lewin's goal against Huddersfield when Idrissa Gueye just kind of levelled up in the middle of the pitch, just kind of took, like, nutmeg one player, took it past on his chest, like played in Calvert-Lewin, like reverse pass to cut to the defence in half. That was just some of the best football I think we played this season. And the game, the goal that I couldn't stop raving about the other week, Digne against Man United, that was pretty nice.
Right on. Terry, what's your goal of the season and your other nominations?
Got to be the Sigurdsson one against Leicester, hasn't it? It's the easiest category to pick this. I mean, the Cruyff turn, he just sends James Maddison for a hot dog, doesn't he? And just absolutely unleashes hell from his right foot. He's Sigurdsson would have been in for a shout for me as well as the most improved player, because he spent last season being just looked uncomfortable all the time, you know, moved about in the team and whatnot. But this season he's turned into the player that we, you know, that we bought, that we wanted, that we were, thought yeah. we were getting. He's whipping in long distance strikes, and he's you know, scoring from free kicks and whatnot. And in fact, my other nomination, other than the ones Max has mentioned, is Sigurdsson's against Man United, where Matic foolishly backs off him, gives him a load of space, and lets him onto his right foot. Leaves David De Gea with no chance at all. Great strike, great goal. And from the same game, the overhead kick from Richarlison. I mean, they're all great goals. They've all got, you know, different things about them that are good. So like Luca Dean, his free kick against Burnley. Been loads of good goals this year, but you just can't beat that one against Leicester. It's just a cut above the distance, the movement on the ball, like the fact that, you know, Schmeichel's got no chance with it. Just a great goal. I could watch it over and over again.
The Sigurdsson goal was mine. I thought about the Richarlison, you know, overhead kick, you know, last week. That one was huge. We had one like team was one of my favorite team goals of the year. It came, and this shows you how little I prepped for this segment. But there was a team goal we got after a corner. The opposition had a corner. It was at Goodison, where I feel like Idrissa Gueye carried the ball forward and got it to Sigurdsson, and they keep going. And who was that against? And I don't even remember who scored.
Burnley. Man United.
No. He means the Burnley at home game.
Yeah.
There's like little triangles of passes on the move, and Richarlison scores with his left foot at the end. That was great. Goal. I completely forgot about that one.
It was just such good team play. Oh my gosh. Yeah,
it
wasn't Burnley, it was Brighton.
Brighton. Okay.
Brighton, it was Brighton, remember? Because the same game, Richarlison knocked it around Shane Duffy, and he's like stuck in the mud, isn't he?
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, that's the same game, but it's the first goal in that game. It's like a breakaway from a corner.
It was a crazy like team move from us, but we broke out so fast.
Yeah. It's Bernard, Gueye, Sigurdsson,
and
Charlison, who like put it together.
Yeah. And there's one other, only because I didn't think he was going to shoot this at all. The very first goal of the season that our entire season, Richarlison's goal against Wolves, where I just didn't think he was going to shoot from there. And he somehow manages to put this perfectly placed curving, you know, right in the bottom right corner. And it was perfect. And it was not one of those that was just a freaking golazo from distance or anything, but it was just so perfectly placed. And I thought, okay, when he did that, I was like, okay, well, was that the second goal we scored or the first?
First.
Yeah, I thought it was our first, but it was just I thought we're going to be okay this year.
No, I'm wrong.
I thought
again.
It was the second.
Because he gets that scruffy corner goal first, doesn't he?
Yeah, that was the one. Because I had totally erased that from my memory, and then and then I said it was first, and then I was like, oh wait, no, it was second. Yeah, so because it was before the red card, right?
I thought it was. Little layoff from Tosin, isn't it? Yeah. Round the corner, but
where we were feeling really good about Tosin at the time because of his combination play. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
Anyway, it was nice. We had a lot of goals to choose from this season. I felt like we had a lot more highlights this season as a squad as a whole. When you get more goal scoring opportunities, you're going to. You know the idea. I remember just. In past years, being really disappointed at our lack of goals outside the 18. You know, not a lot of straight highlight goals. It was always, like, scrappy, like, one dude, you know, bounces off of three other people and he just knocks it in. You know what I mean? Just, you know, pinball goals. But we had a lot of choice. But the Toffee Blues public agrees with all three of us. The Sigurdsson goal is their vote for number one. And apologies for my lack of prep on that one. These guys got me thinking, and I was like, oh, yeah, I should have thought about this more. So, all right, so next, young player of the season. Let's go back to Max.
Calvert-Lewin. Kind of got to be by principle, haven't it, if I think he's the most improved player. But I think on the flip side to that coin, because I said, you know, kind of come in for a minimal fee, not too much pressure on him until he kind of just dumped in at the deep end. So, you know, I think you've got to give, you know, Richarlison's obviously going to be in that with that Chelsea, obviously the uproar over his, the whatever it was, 30 million, 50 million. But he's come in and kind of, you know, lived up to the hype. Did die down a little bit after around, say, you know, December-ish, which we all did, to be fair. And it was kind of reminiscent of his season with Watford. But what did he finish with? 14 goals?
Yeah, I think it was 14.
15?
Was it 14?
13.
Yeah. I think he was like one or two goals off becoming the highest scoring Brazilian since Firmino or something like that. Which, as I said, it was a shame that goal against Burnley got given as an own goal. But
oh, yeah.
I think he's got to be in with a shout.
Terry, young player of the season.
Richarlison. Calvert-Lewin's good for, you know, a good shout as well. But he's the joint top scorer. He spent most of the season as a 21-year-old. He's only just turned 22 in the last week of the season. And the amount of pressure on him because of, you know, his media price tag, the whole, like, sports intelligentsia were just desperate for him to fail. They were salivating at the idea of him flopping at Everton because he'd gone with Silva, he'd left Watford, 50 million, he'd followed the manager, he'd had a good start to last season and then fizzled out. They would have given anything for him to have flopped, but he hasn't done it. He's only 21, so he has had, you know, lulls, he's had bad games, he's had like spells where he's not been hitting the goals, but overall, he's been one of our most important players and he gets, you know, kicked up and down everywhere. You know, he does play act a bit, I'm not going to deny that, but much like with a lot of players who play act, they get fouled a lot more because, you know, players know that they're not going to get the benefits of the doubt a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's dealt with a lot this season, and, you know, towards the end of the season, he's really come into his own and on that right-hand side, and his work rate's gone through the roof compared to, you know, when he was up front or when he was on the left. He was never a lazy player, but he's working so much harder now than he ever was beforehand, and I think it's probably something to do with the manager having a bit down with him maybe, but I just don't think you can look any further. 21 years old, joint top scorer, 50 million price tag, and, you know, pundits in the media, like, before you've even kicked a ball, saying that you've ruined the transfer window and, you know, just basically setting you up to fail, and he's dealt with it, so it's got to be him.
Didn't he tweet a big hug to Paul Merson after the last game of the season?
Yeah.
He really interests me as a player. I'm sure I remember reading in an interview, he said he used to stick pictures of himself up as posters on his wall. Oh, you know, he just thrives off proving people wrong and wants to be, you know, the best he possibly can, which, you know, I don't think that's a fault by any means. He, you know, wants to push himself.
And he's also not somebody who's got this really negative chip on his shoulder. You know what I mean? A lot of people who have that chip and want to prove people wrong, it's a negativity thing. They feel like the world is against them and all that kind of stuff. Richarlison's such a positive guy. You know, you see him on social media. It seems like everybody likes him. You know, the Brazilian team seems to love the guy. I mean, he just seems like just a really positive fella. And there were moments, I was worried when he was falling down every 5 seconds. I think somebody had to talk to him. And because he stopped flopping as much. And I thought his play got better when he stopped doing that. Because I thought it went back to being able to get the fouls you deserve. You know what I mean? Like he was getting in the beginning. Yeah, I like the DCL shout as well in terms of, you know, I think he's really one of the only other players you can really mention for this category, though, you know, as far as age goes, uh-huh. that are getting to play with regularity. Richarlison's age baffles me. I continually forget that the kid is so young. I cannot get over that. But yeah, Richarlison is the guy Toffee Blues fans voted as being young player of the season. So, yeah. And the pigeon dance. That alone, you know what I mean? By itself. All right, player of the season. Going to Terry first this time?
Mm-hmm. I think this is another straightforward one. Luca Dean. Come into the team, looks like he's been there a long time. He, you know, he's made that left back position his own, creates more chances than any other fullback in the league, I think, and he's just great. Everything about he's just been an absolutely outstanding signing. Like less than £20 million paid, he's got an unbelievable pedigree when he arrives. So you know, he's played for all these great clubs. Can go either way. Sometimes you get players like that who you know come to a club outside of European competition, and you know they're a bit lazy or like they've got a bit of an attitude problem. He's an Everton player. He's just every inch an Everton player. He's a hard worker. He's got a little bit of fight in him, a little bit of you know grit. You know he doesn't like shake a tackle. He doesn't like you know like he's not the biggest guy in the world, but he doesn't get bullied. If you know if someone's in a game with him, he gives it back, and I just love him. I hope. He's here for a long time. I think he's been a great acquisition. Some of the honourable mentions, players who, you know, could have been in with a shelf player of the season. Richarlison's one, Sigurdsson's another, you know, the two top scorers. They've had the most influence on our results, for sure, because of the amount of goals they've scored, assists they've got. Idrissa Gueye, it's been fantastic. I would put my house on him having the most man of the matches for the whole season. Especially in the second half of the season, he's just been a machine. If we're talking just second half of the season, Kurt Zouma has been great. But I just don't think you can look past Luca Dean. He's just been outstanding all season. Just stepped into Baines' boots and looks like it's a perfect fit.
Not the easiest job either. Stepping in for Baines, who was, you know, that's like my favorite Everton player. So it was going to take somebody phenomenal. To take not to sit here and quote you know Bobby Martinez, but you know what I mean. I continue to be impressed. Even on the final day of the season, I was impressed in noticing new things about Luca Dean. Max, go ahead, you speak, and then I'll wrap up.
Luca Dean, it's got to be fair. You just hit the nail on the head. I think when you're coming into a new club, obviously you've never played in England before, you know. By that means, he'd never had a winter break before. So to be coming in, to have to fill the boots of such a consistent, established performer as Leighton Baines, who has, you know, such an affection with the Everton fans, you know, obviously hit the ground running completely. And for me, one of the key moments was, you know, last moment of the game, 2-1 down against Watford, free kick in front of the Gladys Street end. And when you're talking about Leighton Baines, obviously one of the, you know, I think, is he still the highest scoring defender in Premier League history? I don't know if that's been taken off him yet, but obviously, you know, his goals, and from free kicks in particular, you know, key feature of his game, but one of the things he's never done is score a free kick at Goodison. And when Luca Dean stepped up and put that free kick into the back of the net, I'm thinking, you know what, we're covered on all bases here. You know, we've got what we wanted from Baines. And, you know, juxtapose that with last season, when we got Cuco Martina, a right back playing at left back, it was just a horror show every Saturday afternoon, weren't it? So we've come a very, very long way. And tribute to Marco Silva, Marcel Brands, and the players that they brought in.
Yeah. So yesterday, game match day, I watched him go down the left flank. Cenk Tosun is in the middle. In between two defenders, he's sandwiched in between them, okay? Not too tight, there's a little bit of space, but he's the shortest of the three, okay? Luca Dean puts a left-footed cross pinpoint on Cenk Tosun's head, all right? Manages to whip it through there onto his head and not and just make sure that the center backs didn't get a piece of it. It was perfect. It literally could not have been more perfect. It was ridiculous. Additionally, another talent of his, besides playing these amazing balls in the middle, have you noticed when players try to beat him onto the line to get a cross off, he has this really remarkable ability to usually not knock it across the end line. There's something the way he does with the angle of his foot where he will find a way to kind of put it backward at the player or out of bounds off the touchline rather than the end line. And it's just this weird, just good technique. It's really good technique. And he just doesn't get beat to the end line for a cross often. It just doesn't happen very often.
Yeah. Just I think how he operates the flank in general is just absolutely brilliant, and that's been complemented entirely by just how good Bernard's been since he's, you know, broke into and got his run of starts. Like, it's like a Baines and Pienaar-esque relationship in terms of its productivity and just how attractive the football is that comes from this. You know, the flicks, the tricks, and the back heels. It's exactly what you want to see. So, testament to them.
Yeah, Luka Dean, really. I didn't know what I expected. I was hoping, but I don't know if I expected what we got out of him. I definitely didn't expect the player that can hit those free kicks outside the box. I did not expect that. I didn't expect his service to be that good, and I didn't expect him to be that good defense. I don't know what I expected. He is just way better. You know, he's just a really, really good signing, and he's good with the fans. You know, he's not cocky.
Definitely.
You know, comes in there appreciative. Happy to be here. You know, I don't know what else. I do agree Idrissa Gueye should get some love. You know, he should get some love. And I agree. I think he did get more man of the matches than any other player. And I think if he leaves this summer, which there is a strong chance, we're going to have to bring in some very remarkable player or players to replace him. He's just a different level of dynamo, you know, that engine in the middle that just keeps churning. Somebody described him as a tiger in the midfield, and I think is a great description because he is everywhere, pouncing, and he does not care if a player's two heads taller than him. He will be in their shit. I show my kids Idrissa Gueye to be like, that is how you hustle. That is how you don't stop. That is the guy you watch. You know what I mean? To show them genuine desire. I mean, I'll be bummed if Gueye leaves, but we're not going to be surprised now. You know? It wouldn't surprise me if they made an agreement with him. Stay now and we'll let you go in the summer. You know, in the winter. So, but we all agree Luka Dean is our guy. And Toffee Blues, they voted over 1,500 votes. Luka Dean is your player of the season. And that's it. We've actually gone longer than I expected. We get excited talking about these players. We are going to do an end of season review later in the week, I believe, so we can kind of wax lyrical about these folks in more detail. I think there's a lot to talk about in terms of the manager, in terms of the director of football, in terms of style, formation, all these things. There's just a lot more discussions to be had about this 2018-2019 Everton season. Okay, now, so Max has left the building. Max has left the building. So it's me and Terry now, and we're gonna talk TV shows. The TV format, I think the long form TV format has really begun to, I think a lot of really good filmmakers are starting to transition over to TV. David Fincher is starting to get involved in TV. I think Tarantino is cutting, I think my buddy Kyle has told me that Tarantino is cutting The Hateful Eight into a television program, which I think is going to be interesting. But you see a lot of really good filmmakers starting to make their way into TV. And so I think because they see a lot of promise in the form. Terry, you're a big Game of Thrones guy. And they have, I think that's the only way you could adapt Game of Thrones is to be a series. You can't do it. You couldn't do it with film.
No, I mean, Game of Thrones is adapted, obviously, from a very rich universe, you know, book series, isn't it? So the level of detail alone, it was really, on the face of it, a little bit too ambitious for TV. It took, I mean, this is recorded after the penultimate episode of the whole series has just been on. We're not going to go into any spoilers or anything like that, but there's one episode left, and I think it's the 70th episode, and there's still a great deal of material that hasn't been touched in the books yet. So, you know, that for them to make a TV show out of a series of books with so many characters, so many locations, it's just a feat in and of itself, because the money that we, you know, has needed to be involved for all these places, this, you know, it's a whole new universe, you know, with characters who've got, like, you know, detailed backstories who aren't even not even the important ones. Like, some of them are minor characters and they've got whole, you know, histories and previous, you know, relationships and whatnot. Game of Thrones, it's taken some knocks in the last in this last season and the season before, when it's ironically deviated away from the books, because the books are for the correspondent seasons aren't out yet. But still, it's just on the face of it, that the sheer scope and size of the TV series compared to other TV shows is massive, I think, when it's over. And, you know, people, it's easy to criticise it when it's on and, you know, you're comparing it to its heyday. So a lot of TV shows, you know, do this. Like, well, God, I want to go on in a minute to The Sopranos. The Sopranos did this as well. They sort of peak around the, you know, the third quarter of their overall run. And in the last quarter, they're still good, but they, you know, dips ever so slightly. I think Game of Thrones is doing that. But it's still such a high bar. It's so, so well made. It's got so, you know, the visuals alone, the set pieces, the, you know, the sheer amount of characters. I think it's beginning to, you know, story-wise and, you know, status-wise, it's almost starting to be seen on par with movies, because movies are now the short form version of media, whereas they used to be the long form and TV was the short form. You'd get half an hour episodes. A lot of shows were episodic and, you know, they may have had a thread running through them, but they were usually, you know, they had one episode arcs. It was, you know, began and, you know, tied up within the one episode of 30 minutes. Occasionally you'd get like a special episode with like a two-parter, whereas Game of Thrones this season, it's an hour long, you know, best part of an hour long anyway. And the last four episodes of this season have been 80 minutes long each, which is a feature time. Like there's four movies, a movie every week in like a brand new, you know, not real location. You know, it's not like they're filming like a police TV show, just set in a station or like, you know, something in an office where it's quite easy to make. They're setting it in like a fictional world, which is, you know, it's not even like modern times where you can have like, you know, CGI, everything. No, costume design's got to be on point and everything. It's just a massive, massive beast of a TV show. And I think we'll miss it when it's gone. I think people are criticizing it now because it's, you know, it's failing its own high standards ever so slightly, but when it's not around, it'll be remembered as until it's bettered, it'll probably be remembered as the best made TV show ever, if not the best written. But it's still up there for that as well.
Yeah, I have not watched one bit of it. Not because I'm anti Game of Thrones. I'm very much pro Game of Thrones, but I've read the books. But I am going to be tearing through the series. I might have to do it by myself because I'm afraid I'm not gonna be able to get my wife to watch with me. Because normally we watch pretty much like almost everything, you know, because we sort of like all the same stuff. I think I'm gonna have to do that one by myself. But that's one of the things my buddies told me, and he's really not a TV guy, and he used to every week he would come to me, "Have you started watching Game of Thrones yet?" And I'm like, "No, I don't even have HBO. Still don't." He was just like, the sheer production value and scope, the spectacle is absurd. It's enormous. Which, yeah, that's impressive by itself for TV. You know, that's huge. When TV starts getting the budgets of film, that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's starting to. I hear a lot of filmmakers, they're saying there's more money in TV now, and that's what they're trying to focus on. No kidding. So we are going to focus more on the long form here of TV rather than the short comedy. I think that's a different show, because if we did that, it would literally be me and Terry talking Simpsons the whole time. And Max would, if he was here, he'd be doing the same thing. So Terry, why don't you go ahead and launch into your off-the-cuff argument to the poor person who just has no experience with TV, maybe doesn't, he's just like, I don't do TV. And you're like, really? Well, here's why you suck. And you tell them about this show, all right?
Well, I touched on it a minute ago. I knew, you know, you were going to ask me this. And as much as I like Game of Thrones, and there's a lot of other good shows, you can't look any further than The Sopranos. The Sopranos, there's been shows that followed it that did, you know, some of the things that they did better. But much like the Beatles with music, and, well, rock music especially, they will always be first. Whether the best is immaterial, they will always be first. Because 1999, a show of that sort of, you know, vision and that level, that depth and that, you know, quality was unheard of. It was the first, like, the term high cinema, you know, for movies that are, like, you know, more art house, you know, got a lot more story. They're not just big blockbusters. That's the first high TV show, I think, the highbrow, high concept TV, where it's not, you know, on the face of it, and goes, oh, it's a gangster show about gangsters. Like, it's not. It's a psychological, you know, sort of, you know, piece on this character, this really complex, really, you know, intricate, really, you know, rich character of Tony Soprano. How interesting and, like, you know, real the world around him was. All these characters had, you know, their own, you know, sort of levels to them as well. And it's just got so much to it, the show. Like, you know, Tony Soprano's in therapy, and it tackles not only his life as a, you know, high profile, you know, member of the mafia, but also how he deals with his family life and, you know, his wife and his kids, and, you know, how he deals with, you know, depression, and how he deals with, you know, living up to, you know, how he lives with dealing with his upbringing, like the way his mother raised him. And it's just a level of, you know, of detail that you just wouldn't see in movies, even, like, of character detail. You know, gangster films and, you know, mafia films tended to be before this very, very stereotype, you know, driven. The, you know, like, oh, you didn't see what went on behind closed doors of the gangsters. They were just bad guys who, you know, killed people and robbed people and were involved in crime. Whereas this really, you know, in a way humanized them, but in a way showed you how inhuman they all are. You know, they all love their family. They all, you know, they all cry. They all get upset, but they also still kill people, and they still, you know, they separate that in their own minds, and they're all, you know, quasi-religious as well, but despite the fact that some of the worst people in the world. And I just think, and the show's got everything. It's funny as well. It's you know, makes you laugh throughout it. And I look back on it now, The Sopranos, and just think, how did that get made before there was others like it? Now you can pitch a show like that, you know, Breaking Bad, you know, shows like that, The Wire. You can pitch shows like that, and there's a track record of them being successful, thanks to The Sopranos, because that was so big, and it just blazed the trail for everything else to you know, high, like I've said it, I'll repeat myself, high concept television is now in vogue. It's competing with film for the, you know, as you say, directors, for producers. You can tell a more detailed story in TV now than you could in movies, and that never used to be the case before The Sopranos, I don't think.
When you talk about The Sopranos, it's hard not to think about, you mentioned Breaking Bad, and the newer version of Breaking Bad, Ozark, which is phenomenal as well. Very similar structure to Breaking Bad, and there's some similarities, but the different, I think it's more similar to Breaking Bad because it's these people that are very intelligent, but maybe they haven't had to be as much professional criminals, You know, I guess that's the difference, is they're kind of thrown into a world that they don't fully understand. Sopranos, Tony's world that he didn't understand was really his own feelings. And that's what he gets thrown into when he starts having, like, you know, panic attacks. You know, and it really is a psychological study. It's a show brave enough to have dream sequences driven by, that really don't fully, they make loose bits of sense. The problem with a lot of dream sequences in films and stories is they make too much sense. They don't use, like, dream logic, because dream logic is very loose. You know, it's weird. It usually doesn't make sense. It doesn't, like, have, like, you have to interpret, like, symbols. It's not, like, obvious symbolism in dreams. It's different, you know? But I thought that Sopranos did really well with their dream work, in that it didn't, it made sense to a certain extent, but I don't know, it was really well executed. It's a show that wasn't afraid to be a little literary at times, which I like. Make me think. For God's sake, I'm down with that. That's great. Characters are brilliant. Polly, just love Polly. Big Puss. They're awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, Christopher Montesanti, Adriana. and the family just. Gosh, it's just a lot of really fine actors in that show.
Yeah,
there's not a whole lot of, like, holes you poke in The Sopranos. You know?
Well, Edie Falco plays Carmela, is also, like, an absolute giant on screen. Yeah. Like, you know, only really overshadowed in the show by James Gandolfini as Tony. She's brilliant, a brilliant actress in the show. Like, sometimes the storylines they give her in the later series are a little bit ropey. Like, they don't really give her much to work with, but anything she, I found that when she, the story diverges away from Tony, it's not as good. But when she's at loggerheads with Tony, when she's like, you know, when it's, she's very much in Tony's story and she's involved, the acting from the two of them is outstanding. Like, the way they work together, it's just a masterclass. I think it's just an amazing show. Now, yeah. The dream sequences, they are very brave because they don't make sense and there's a lot of symbolism, as you say, in it. And it's a lot of stuff that you feel like only the director really gets. And that's quite, you know, it's quite dicey when you start doing stuff like...
It's really risky.
We can't talk about The Sopranos, though, without mentioning the ending. What do you think of the ending?
I think if you've been following the show the whole time... you sort of know what's going on. That's what I'll say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think you know. And I think if you... I think you should know that world by now, is what I would say. Without spoiling anything, the people who are out there listening, I'm sure they have opinions if they've seen it before. So, yeah. But at this point, we don't want to spoil anything, but if I feel like you use your common sense and you move through that.
Yeah. I was just gonna spoil it because it finished over like 10 years ago. Because I'm still telling this person who's never watched it, haven't I? That's the whole point. The guy who's never watched it's still new to him. But for me, yeah, you are right. The show tells you throughout the last season what the ending is. It, you know, if you watch the especially the last season, you know, because it's mentioned and it's explained, and then when it happens, the ending, you know, because it's built to that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a little confusing when you first see it, but when you really take a step back, you go, oh, that makes sense.
And I think the music at that moment is helping you come to your conclusions as well. So very good choice, and it's really difficult to follow that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thanks a lot. Following Sopranos. because this was sort of a spur of the moment topic, I am going to be mentioning a show that I feel like you mentioned earlier that Sopranos paved the way for, but isn't the exact same type of show. I'm gonna say The Wire. All right, I'm gonna say The Wire. It's not the exact same type of show as The Sopranos, because The Sopranos, your protagonists are your mafia guys. It's Tony and those guys. They are the people who are usually antagonists. They are the ones who are usually going against the action in a lot of. But they are your protagonists in The Sopranos. In The Wire, it's giving you a lot of character from all sides. You know what I mean? So typically, I'm the guy who prefers shows or movies that come from one point of view and you gradually learn more about people as you go. But this is more like an omniscient point of view. You know, you're getting most of the detail from the police perspective. But additionally, you're getting a lot of character from these like very intelligent, organized drug dealers in Baltimore. And it's fascinating the world that they plant you in, because you're not only learning about the drug trade in Baltimore in like, you know, the not so great parts of Baltimore, but additionally, you're learning a lot about police work and how to fight and what type of police work is ineffective against that type of crime. And what type of police work is effective, the politics between it. Different seasons focus on different areas. You know, the first season is more like based on the streets. The second season is more about the bigger shipments coming in. It's fascinating. They seem to know beforehand what they wanted to cover on every season and kind of cover big chunks every time. It's giving you character about everyone. That's one of the things about The Sopranos you didn't get as much of, because a lot of the FBI and cops, you don't really get to know them as well. You know what I mean? And you sort of hate them. You know what I mean? Because I love these shows that get you on the side of these bad people. You know what I mean? I have no idea why the humanization of characters like that is great. I mean, Idris Elba in The Wire plays Stringer Bell, and he's one of the most intelligent people in the entire show, one of the most intelligent characters in the show, all right? And you get to know that character. You know, you're getting to know that character from an angle that I think it's really easy to be like, oh, he's part of a drug dealing group, so, you know, he's got to be an idiot. You know what I mean? He's got to be an awful, you know, but it's more layered than that. And the cops aren't just like super good because they're cops. Some of them are idiots. Your main character, McNulty, who I think is an Irish actor, actually, he's profoundly flawed at like everything except for police work. You know what I mean? Like, his personal life is a wreck. It's an absolute wreck. And so, and then you've got some of these guys in the drug dealers and everything. You get to know some of them are quite smart, and some of them have opportunities to get out. Some of them get sucked back in, and it's just you're getting every layer, and it's fully immersing you in the entire world. That was one of the things I loved about Ozark, is I knew nothing about money laundering before that show, and then I watched that show, and it is as if someone was an expert. And they dunked me into that world, and I was immersed, and I was like, oh my God, I know. It was cool as hell. An expert was teaching me about it. And that's what I feel like when I watch The Sopranos, when I watch The Wire, you know, when I watch Breaking Bad, Ozark. These shows, that they clearly do their research, and I love that shit. You know, I am able to go into this different world with these different people and somehow connect with these humans that are in these worlds. It is so good, and... But The Wire has given you a plethora of characters as well. Because Omar. If you've never seen The Wire and you don't know who Omar is, you need to see The Wire and know who Omar is. Okay? He's this actor who has this... He's got this big scar across his face. And oh my God. He's like a superhuman character. And just the... I mean, he's got... balls hanging by his knees, this guy. It's ridiculous, the guts on him, all right? It's insane. So, yeah, it's just a really well-made show, and it's not the type of show I would normally enjoy. And I think it would have been... I think, Terry, you saying the Sopranos is, I think, a lot of people, that's their answer for their favorite long-form dramatic TV show. I think most folks, that is their answer, because it was early, and it was such a transformative moment in television, you know? I mentioned The Wire because I feel like that's one of those shows that The Sopranos helped make happen, and they took The Sopranos format and did something weird with it and gave you more angles. Yeah, and one last thing is the sheer realism of the actors in that. Okay, there are times where it takes you a while to figure out what the hell they are saying because it's so much slang and the research that they've done, and you have to figure it out. It's good, and it doesn't treat you like an idiot as a viewer. You know what I mean? A lot of places would like translate it for you, you know, using bullshit exposition and like stupid lampshade characters finding a way to translate it for you. No, The Wire is just like, no, good luck to you. You know, they just throw you out there. They're like, no life preserver. No, we're not going to let you float. You float on your own or you don't. It's cool. It's so good. So anyway, we have gone through The Sopranos and The Wire. It'd be easy to go through more, frankly. We watch a lot of stuff, Terry and I. And I'm sure Max is going to be a little bummed he missed out on the opportunity. But honestly, I think he would have talked about The Sopranos in a heartbeat, knowing him, you know? Yeah. So anyway, all right, Terry. Well, let's wrap this up. Yeah, and if anybody wants to talk TV with us, feel free to send us the occasional tweet. We'll handle that, no problem. I guess it's time to end. Thanks so much for listening to the Toffee Blues podcast. We really appreciate it. We'd appreciate it if you subscribe to the Toffee Blues podcast, rate it if you can, all that stuff. Please, if you want to see what we look like, check the Toffee Blues YouTube channel. That would be awesome. Our visages are there in video form. If you want more Max, he shows up all over the place. So check his Twitter. He'll tell you where he's going to be. But he's often on the Toffee Blues website. Terry, you can find Terry on the Twitter as well with his various gifts of many lands, and he'll pretty much tell you when he's going to show up on the Liverpool Echo Fan Jury, as they're kind enough to have him on there and print his words. Lastly, the Toffee Blues website. Check that out. All things Everton. Follow the Toffee Blues on Twitter, Instagram, and the Facebooks. Terry, that's it. Thanks so much for the talk, man.
You're welcome, man. Thanks for having me back on. Always a pleasure to speak to you.
Yeah, thanks so much. And Max, I know you're out there living your life, living the dream. But yeah, thanks again for your wisdom as always today, man. All right, I guess that's it. We'll wrap this up. Much love to everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.